Welcome to The Other Side of 40. My name is April Grant, and I'm here to help women make positive changes with their lives after the age of 40. Let The Other Side of 40 become your community to find inspiration and support to start the next chapter of your life. Welcome to this week's episode of The Other Side of 40. Today we have with us Kay Banks. Dr. Kay Banks is a clinical associate professor and assistant dean for student affairs and diversity. As an administrator in the Honors College, she oversees honors advisement, the senior thesis requirement, and advises the Black Honors Caucus. In her faculty role, she teaches courses related to her research on social capital, social networks, and upward mobility. Dr. Banks' professional background is diverse, combining 20 years as an experienced leader in higher education with a strong expertise in academic and student affairs. When she is not spending time with her students, Kay is either volunteering in the community or spending time with her daughter. So we are going to start out with letting the audience know where they can find you, Dr. Banks.
Oh, wow. You know, I like that introduction. I'm going to need to record that and listen to it every morning. I just had a guest on my podcast and she said the same thing to me when I introduced her. And now I know what she was talking about. Like, yeah, I need to have that recorded as an affirmation. But so my podcast is Coffee and Divorce Chat. And so that's where you can find me on Instagram and also a YouTube channel as well, where I talk about all things divorce and moving past a divorce, as well as trying to provide some resources to help demystify divorce, especially in the Black community. So
awesome. So we're going to start with our signature question. What is your awakening moment? Tell us about it.
I think I'm ready to answer this. So wow. I would say I had two awakening moments, you know, if I can have two.
And you sure can.
Okay, great. Good. That makes me feel a lot better. Okay. So the first one was about 9 years ago before I came to the University of South Carolina. And it actually goes back to my graduate program. I remember our graduate program director said to us one day, and so my master's degree is in higher ed. And she said, one day you're going to be, you know, you're going to have to be faced with trying to decide like your ethics and your values. And you're going to be in a situation as an administrator on a college campus where you're going to have to decide, you know, are you going to be ethical in this situation? Or what are your values? How do they align with the university? And I knew what she was talking about, but I was like, I wonder what is that going to look like? You know, and she couldn't give any, you know, concrete examples or anything like that. And so my last year at my previous university, the president, I'd been there for about 9 years. And the president said to me, one of our meetings, we really didn't get along. You know, we got along, but there were just things that, we just didn't mesh on a lot. And in all fairness, he'd been my 7th president that I had worked with in the 8 years I had been there at this university. Okay. So that tells you about being over there a lot. Yeah, a lot. And not about 9 years. And one president was interim president. So so technically he's probably like my fifth or sixth. But anyway, when he made a comment about, how I was as a leader, I was a student affairs, I was a senior level administrator. And basically he said, you know, if you could just, you know, do this and do that. And if you could, my evaluations were high, but he had some ad libs to say. And I remember in that moment, the things that he shared with me about, well, you know, maybe if you could come back and do dinner with everyone, you know, you go home. So I was questioning my values as being a mom and a parent. And I was the youngest member of the president's president's group. And I was the only minority. And then I was the only female for the longest time. And so all of those factors, and it wasn't just when he was president, it was actually before that. But what he shared with me was my awakening moment. And that was when I thought about what my graduate program director said. And I thought in that moment, I will not change who I am for you. And It was very powerful. I remember sitting there listening to him and I just said, thank you, Dr. So-and-so. I'll keep all these things in mind. And I asked, will this affect my evaluation? He goes, no. You're great. You're doing a great job. But it was that, you know, the innuendo, that those little comments there. And then I said to myself, I will also start to look for another job. Like, this is definitely, I need to look to leave here as well. And then the seconding awakening moment occurred right before I turned 40, right at 40, and was my going to my divorce. And my ex-husband made a comment. We were talking about my, you know, you go for a doctorate, those graduate degrees, they add up, and that student debt adds up. And so we were discussing, you know, making the payments. He was discussing me making the payments and what that was going to look like. Let me clarify, which is one of those reasons. But when he had calculated and said, you know, probably by the time you're 48, if you pay like this, you'll be debt free. And I immediately thought, I don't want to be married to you when I'm 48. And I had never had that much, never, like, he wasn't, there wasn't anything alarming at that time that he was doing, but I immediately thought, and it bothered my spirit. I was like, why am I thinking this way? And it just, that was my awakening of, like, you have not been paying attention to some things, or at least confirming some things that you know what's going on. And so I started paying close attention. I started journaling again. And that led to me, you know, saying, this is not working. And we need to, a couple of years after that, saying that, and, you know, we need to separate it, and I'm asking for a divorce.
So you said in that moment, there was something that he said, but it wasn't exactly what he said. It sounds like there was a pattern before that hit your mind in that moment. So are you saying that he often divided the finances or made ways to separate himself from what you were doing that became off-putting in that moment?
Yeah, definitely make more clear that, you know, are you going to continue to deal with the fact that you're paying for everything, that you are paying for everything? And when I tell people that, you know, I always made more money than him, but not that much more.
Right.
And even though, and definitely I was not making the money that majority of my colleagues in the field were making
at all.
And it was, when you work for a private institution, sometimes that happens, but I enjoyed what I did. But it was that moment, it was like, I'm not going to continue to do this. I'm paying X, Y, and Z, you know, healthcare, things like that. He paid, really, I was paying mortgage. You know, he was really paying very basic stuff, and took advantage. He took advantage of the situation of me making a little bit more money than he was making, so he could take care of this. But then he walked out of a marriage with a great credit rating, and I did not because of that. So,
ooh, two things you talked about: credit rating and student loan debt. And I know this is a divorce episode, but those are two super important things that we don't talk enough about, especially in the Black community. And we don't even learn what it is. So if you don't know what it is, it's actually the judgment of how you treat credit, which means if you don't use credit, they can't judge you on how you treat it. So therefore you have no credit score. So you have to have credit so they can judge how you use it, so they can score you on
it. Love that definition. That is the basic definition that we should be teaching every high school student, every middle school student. You know, what does that look like? And my credit, I had the house before we got married. I had saved, built up, and, you know, built a house, like basically built a house from the ground up, your basic 3-bedroom, 2-bedroom house. And so, yeah, it was, you know, my credit was decent, but it was, you know, you're making the money, but then you don't have the credit score to eventually get the house that you want as I was exiting out. And so it took, you know, building that up again. But I sold the house before we divorced, because I didn't want, and his name was never on the house at all. And so that was probably, you know, my lawyer's like, that was probably the wisest thing you ever did. Maybe you knew subconsciously y'all were not going to stay married. And I actually told him, no, like, there were so many times that I actually think he might have realized that he probably wouldn't want to be married to me for a while, because I kept trying to put him on the house. Like, hey, we need to go over here to the county and do it. He's like, yeah, we have time. Like, no big deal. And then after a while, I just kind of forgot about it. You know, it was no big deal at all. So,
quick legal argument. My background in law is keep separate property separate, especially before you're married, especially in this day and age.
Yes. I'm so glad I did. I'm so glad I did. There are other things, you know, now I'm a member of a vacation club, you know, one of those groups that allows you to travel. And that was one investment I made about a year after the divorce was finalized. I went and did one of those because I always wanted one, but I thought to myself, I'm not getting this with you because I don't want to have to separate this eventually. But yeah.
So you got your divorce, and what was the one thing that stood out to you in that process? What's one thing? Let's start there.
So I have an episode that I did several months ago about reclaiming your narrative. And that's the one thing that stands out the most. I didn't realize, you know, I consider myself to be a strong, independent, confident woman. And exiting out of my marriage, I realized how much he could have broken me. And that's why I wanted to share my story, because it was an amicable divorce. You know, when I asked for it, he's like, yeah, we haven't been talking. I mean, he lives down the street from me, you know, we live close proximity. He tells people I found the neighborhood first. So, you know, I tell people I was my place, my home, you know, but he tells people he stays there because of, you know, our daughter, like he doesn't want to be that far from her and, you know, she's young, but he still, by the lack of attention and the lack of conversation, and I'm an introvert, but when I have a partner and I crave intellectual curiosity and that conversation and that interaction, and when you take that away, that was very hard to deal with. And so then I lost a part of myself. And coming out of my divorce, realizing the things that I had, it was really, who was I? I love my therapist, because everyone goes to therapy for different reasons. And what we had to unpack was, who is Kay?
Yeah.
You know, who is Kay? And claiming my narrative again. And it took a year and a half, you know, for me not to just claim it again, but to be comfortable. April, you're gonna make me cry, girl. To be comfortable with it again. Like these are like kind of happy tears, but yeah, that was one thing. Just being authentically me again.
I think even though not everyone's been married and divorced, I really think that's a woman thing.
Amen.
For marriages, like I'm in my marriage, and that's part of the reason this podcast started, was that I lost myself in my marriage. I became wife and mom primarily, and April disappeared. April was nowhere to be found. I mean, I was doing things, I was going out, but I think a lot of that, and I'm an ambivert, I think they call it, but a lot of it was just to shield the fact that I didn't want to be home. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know why I didn't want to be home, because home wasn't an uncomfortable place, but it was just, I was hiding from, you know, coming to the realization that I needed to do that deep soul search and figure out who I was again. And so I'm still looking, I'm still finding it, because the other person that I wanted to be before is not there anymore. That's not the person I want to be in my future. So I'm really looking for what my future self looks like. So
Thank you for sharing that, because I think that people don't think that maybe that's the midlife crisis or something like that, but I don't think that it is. But thank you for sharing that, because I think people forget about that. And whatever type of relationship that you're in, and, you know, yes, we're speaking from the woman's, you know, from the female perspective, but I think men, one thing that I've met some men, not necessarily the dating type of conversation, but just getting to know someone and being friends with them. And they've shared that too, yeah. You know, about, you know, putting, they're typically the givers, or those are the men that are acts of service. And so putting, you know, the other person first. And so they're almost in a way reclaiming, you know, who they are in that identity. But yeah, but for me, that's what it was, wife and mom, you know. So in my job, for me, it was wife, mom, and job, you know. And so who are you without those three labels? And then don't add divorce.
No.
You know, so now it's like, oh, I'm a divorced wife, mom. You know, I'm a divorced, not nicely, take the wife and I'm divorced, mom. With this job, like, no, who is right. Kay?
You mentioned that you wanted to share your story. Did you want to share it from the beginning, or was there anything in particular you want to share about your story?
I think starting there about not losing yourself. Okay. And I think it could even go for in friendships, you know, you get in a networks. I do research on social networks. And so when you get in a network of people or a group of people, you can also get lost in that too as well. And so I think starting there with not losing yourself and claiming who you are. What's been interesting is meeting women who have put projects to the side or things that like kind of what you share. And then what they've been able to do after their divorce is start those again, or, you know, claim those again, and being able to be successful with it. Because sometimes, you know, you hear like, oh, after her divorce, she, you know, started this group. And a lot of times it's always been there. It was always there. The idea was, heard someone recently say, I birthed this idea. Like, you know, I was pregnant with it, then I birthed it. And I was like, that's an interesting analogy with it. But I think, you know, my story of starting with compromising and never should have compromised, so many signs of never should have, you know, gotten married and still did it. You know, I had this invisible checklist in my 30s. And then going through the divorce and realizing that, you know, you may not have a checklist, but then how do you prepare for the next part of your life? And so that's what drew me to your podcast about the other side of 40, yeah. Because the other side of 40, most of the women I have met that are divorced are over 40, you know, and so they are like rebuilding their life. It's frustrating. It's challenging. And then when you're talking about dating, and just looking at your future. And I'm kind of like right in between right now. You know, I'm post-divorce almost 2 years, about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And it's the dating that probably frustrates me the most about, because honestly, like my ex is getting married next month. So he found somebody and like a month after our divorce online, and people have asked me, do I believe him? You know, you sure that really happened? And one thing I can count on him, he is a person of integrity. He's not going to lie, because that will diminish the persona of his demeanor that he portrays. I'm a good guy. I'm a good man. But Abel, it just burns me up. I'm happy that he's found somebody. She's fine. She's all right. You know, the words of my child, she's like, she's not coming for me. Like, that's what my child, that's how she described this person. And she's nice, respectful, sweet, and all this stuff. But it burns me up, because I really wanted to have somebody to show off to him and be like, I found something better than you. Like, I just like, it just burns me up that I can't. But then I'm just like, but it's okay, because the blessing that is coming is going to be fine. And so, you know, oh goodness. Yeah.
Well, I was just actually talking to a friend, because they say, I was reading some study that most men, if they were relatively happy, they don't have to be enthusiastic. If they enjoyed being married, they will be married very quickly afterwards,
yes.
Period. And it was a friend, and she was talking to a widower, and he's already like looking for love. And she, for her, she's also a widower. She's like, I'm nowhere near ready. And I don't think he is either. And I said, but you guys could both be in the same stage and he would still be willing to commit. And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah. If he was even mildly happy in his relationship, he wants to be married. He likes that dynamic. He wants that person. And the number of people, if you look at, especially long-term couples, and they've been married forever, and the number of husbands that get married right after the divorce or the mom dies, you know, within a year, they're married, not divorced, yeah. not dating, not engaged, but full on married within a year. It's a pretty high number out there. So be prepared for that.
That's exactly right. And it's okay. That's part of my story too. You know, I remember sharing with some friends, and that, you know, what we see about divorce is that story that you should have, you know, you find somebody, you marry, so you got divorced, so now you should be dating, find someone, married, boom. That's what the story of divorce seemed to be. You know, and when I was in some Facebook groups, when I was just like looking on Instagram, now there's Clubhouse, oh goodness. But, you know, but in those early stages of just that social media, and I just wanted to tell something different, like, no, that's okay that you're not. Yeah. That it's okay that you got love bombed and ghosted. You know, that's a part of the experience of dating. Or it's okay that the first couple months or first year of your separation, you decided just to Netflix and chill by yourself. You didn't really want in that to say that you didn't know how to talk to people. That's like, that's my story, yeah. You know, to go through. And I didn't see anybody really me, someone like me, not a life coach, not a divorce lawyer, no one in the resource side, but just someone average saying, yeah, this is my story. And it sucks sometimes, but it's okay. And you are going to have this life post-divorce to really have these authentic conversations as you're trying to figure out who you are in this, you know, in the case of this podcast, over 40, you know, yeah. What is that though? You know, what does that look like?
Well, what I find is a lot of people stay in a relationship without, how do I say this? When you and your ex realized you guys weren't really compatible as a married couple, but you mm-hmm. both probably held on to that relationship much longer than necessary because you wanted to make this marriage work. And I think from the dating part all the way through marriage, people don't want that failure as if someone did something wrong. Mm-hmm. But incompatibility doesn't mean that person is not a good person, and doesn't mean you're not a good person. You can just be incompatible. And I find that not to look like the bad person, they don't want to leave and they don't want to leave the relationship there because they don't want to go to their friends and say, well, what's wrong with them? Nothing. Just
exactly.
I don't see my future. And one of the things that differentiates me from a lot of people I know or I grew up with was I've always dated the nice guy. I like dating the nice guy. I don't like the drama of the bad guy. I like my drama in reality TV and not in my personal life. But every relationship I left, I purposely chose to leave, and not because they did anything wrong. I just said, I'm looking at our relationship together and I'm realizing 5 years down the line, we're not going to be together. It's just not going to happen. I can see where we're starting to veer in different directions. I mean, this is from high school. I broke up with my high school boyfriend because he was supposed to be going to college and decided he wasn't going to go.
You're like, oh no, our future is not together then.
And I said, you know, and we were both A students and everything, but he decided to stay back with his family and help his family, which is fine, which is admirable. But it's not the direction I wanted to go. And I didn't want to be in a situation where I'm constantly choosing between my progress and him being with him to help him maintain his family. And I know that's what was going to happen. And so tearfully, all sad and everything, I told him we're breaking up. And it's like, what's wrong? I was like, this ain't going to happen. I see us 5 years down the line, and 5 years down the line, we will not be together. And that happened over and over again. I could just see 5 years down the line that I would be doing severe compromising to make this work, to make things happen. Because some of it was, you know, stroking his ego a little bit more than, you know, me, trying to make him feel more adequate, because there was one ex was actually a little more, I don't know. He wasn't college educated, and he felt some kind of way about that. Mm-hmm. He felt like he couldn't do certain things because he wasn't college educated. And I was a law school graduate. I was in law school at the time. And he just, I don't know. He was insecure about that. I didn't really have a problem with it. And I was like, but I need someone who's willing to think, to grow, to do these things. Cause I had gotten over the desire to, well, he has to go to college. It was, I just need you to want to learn and grow and, you know, pick up a newspaper and, you know, learn about the stock market. You don't have to invest in the stock market, but understand what it is, how it works, you know, things
conversation
like
conversation here.
Right. And even if we can have this whole conversation about GameStop, ain't nobody put money in the stock market, but we can, you know, banter back and forth on whether they should have done it, whether Robin cut people off, whether, you know, I needed somebody who could go back and forth with me over that. And again, great guy. He's a very nice guy. Not for me. And I think we spend a lot of time saying he's a great guy. So I have to make this work because he's great. And it's like, no, you don't have to make it work, because just because he's great doesn't mean he's great for you and for where you want to go in your life.
And I'm sorry. I was like, yeah, I love that. There's so many things to unpack there. Incompatibility, compromising, and shame, you know? And so definitely feeling that way. And I'm an introvert, but my podcast helps me deal with the therapy. Like, I'm getting over that shame, the knowing that before I got married, should not have gotten married, you know, should not even said yes, you know, to where we were going with this, but, and didn't really see the incompatibility until after, like soon after we got married, you know, and the shame kind of with that, was sharing with someone recently that, you know, I had this, this persona of being high maintenance, and, you know, and so one, I compromised with him, and I never compromised with anybody else at all. I had your mentality, and I decided to compromise. I'm like, well, I'm not perfect. He's not perfect, but he fits everything else on this checklist. And then, you know, together we can, and it would quickly, we'll soon realize that that was not, you know, the best match and fit. And we were only married for 8 years. And I say only 8 years, but it definitely felt like a lifetime. You know, I had to get over the fact that I felt like I wasted my 30s on him, because I got married when I was 31. Like, yeah, I was 31. We got married. And so divorce was final. Actually, wait, hold on. So we were married. I'm like 9 years. We're married 9 years. So being incompatible and realize that, and I really actually didn't realize how incompatible we were in terms of, and how much I compromised until really towards the end of our marriage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we think these things as women, and that's why I like sharing my story, because it's something that I'm not ashamed to say it like now, but at the time, because like, how can you be this smart, educated woman? And really, I had to get over that. Like, guess what? We all make mistakes. We all have judgment, errors in judgment. I don't think it was an error in judgment, because I have a wonderful child and she has a great father. He's just not, we're not compatible. Yeah. We are really more, and I don't mean to say we're like friends, but we're cordial with each other. We get along. And, you know, there are times I drive him crazy. There are times he drives me crazy, and, you know, with some stuff. And I'm like, why in the world are you doing this? And there are things I know not to expect from him that he's going to get and understand. But I, you know, sharing that it's okay. You know, it's okay that you realize that you married somebody. It didn't turn out the way that you want, and you want more. And there's nothing wrong with that, of that. And I think sometimes I am though careful about things I do share, because I think men take it the wrong way. Like, well, what's wrong with you? Like, you know, how you look fine. So what went wrong? Nothing went wrong, except I made a decision that didn't go the way that I thought it was going to go. Yes. And as a result of that, and like I said to my ex, we both deserve to be happy. Like, I'm content, I'm happy, but we are too young to go through, you know, we both have parents that have been married 20 some plus years and things like that. I was like, but we both deserve. But one thing that came out of that was really interesting. So as women, you know, we think these things, your intuition, all that stuff going on. When we turned 40, we were both the same age. And when we got ready to turn 40, I was really excited about it and try to plan something with them. And he was like, no, it's fine. It's, you know, it's whatever case may be. And just a little bit, you talked a little bit about my research, what I do. So I travel to Italy a lot to do research. So I've been to Italy probably twice prior to our 40th birthday. So now I'm getting ready to do another travel. He never wanted to go, but now I'm getting ready to go to London to present at Oxford University, which is very prestigious university, getting a chance to participate as speaker on what I do. And he had at once said to me that he could never see himself in, like, you know, Europe except the UK, you know, and history, because he was a history buff. And I like to, when I share the story, I like to say he forgot who he married, because I guess he didn't realize that this was going to happen one day.
Yeah.
You know, because I said to him, I was like, well, you know, there's probably a possibility that I will be like in London or the UK, like in a year or two. And he said, well, we can go at that time. And so long story short, I get an invitation to go. And I remember hearing his father on the phone say to him, your wife is getting ready to go here. Like, he didn't want to go. He didn't want to go. And my heart dropped when he said, that's not me, Kay. That is you. And I was looking at him like, what? And he's like, that's you. You want to do those things. And I thought, where's this person that I married 6, 7 years ago that said this, just 2 years ago had said this to me? And I knew in that moment, my marriage was over. Like, I knew it'd been festering for a while and all that. And I thought, if we're not on the same page with this, and you know what's happening. And so I said, that's fine. I'm taking our daughter. So give me the credit card so I can get her flight, because everything else was taken care of for that. But what ended up coming out of that hole when I got back from those travels and a week later was my birthday, my 40th birthday. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't want to do anything. I have a cousin who lives in Miami, Florida. I got on a flight to go to Florida. I told him actually in the summer, I'm going to Florida since she don't want to do anything for the birthday. Mm-hmm. So I got on a flight, come back from London. 2 days later, I'm a flight to Miami, go for the weekend. I come back that Sunday night and I'm exhausted, tired. Mm-hmm. And so he comes into our bedroom. He says, was I a different person when we were dating? And I'm like laying in bed and I sit up and I'm like, what are you talking about? Because in my head, I hadn't really, no one knew what was going on. Right. My cousin had gone to Italy with me 2 years before that. And I kind of shared some things with her. She's a psychiatrist. And she's just like, you probably need to go talk to somebody. You know, we just kind of talked it through. And she'd been divorced for a long time. But after that, it'd been almost a year or two before I really revisited what was happening until the whole thing, he's not going to London. But anyways, you can tell him a story too. But long story short, when he said that, I was like, what are you talking about? And then he said, did I portray myself to be different when we were dating than now? And I remember thinking, yes, I am not imagining this, because I was racking my brain. I'm a researcher. So by this time I'm researching what happened. Like by now I'm woke, I'm woke, in terms like we sold the house, we live in a house rental. So I'm trying to figure out, can you save this marriage or what's happening? Then you tell me you don't want to do this. So now I'm really don't know what's going on. And it was racking my brain because I'm like, not where did I go wrong, but what happened? And when he said that, I said, you sure did. And here are the three areas that you did it in. But that's how maybe that should have been my awakening moment, but actually, it's just, you know, and so I share that to say that, you know, if that's you, if you have thought that, because those are things those are our silent thoughts that we don't mm-hmm. think aloud or we don't say aloud, because it's like, dang, like, you know, it's okay. Say it aloud, write it down on a sheet of paper. Don't be afraid to acknowledge that, because I don't know how you can get to a place where you can move on comfortably if you don't acknowledge and say that, journal it, see if there's something along those lines of working on the, because on the other side of 40, we don't want to have to worry about the things, the mistakes, the times that we should have done something differently. On this side of our life, we should be okay with, yeah, that happened, but you know what? This is what I learned from it. Mm-hmm. That now I am myself, whether I'm married or divorced or separated or a widow. There's one of my friends is a widow and she's getting married in 2 years, but she has really been encouragement to me mm-hmm. of just finding love again. And the whole, we call her the hopeless romantic. And she's about almost 10 years older than me. So she's like 52, 53. And she just loves life. Right. And I always tell all the time, she's like, auntie, big sister. I'm like, I want to be like that in my 50s. And so this other side, that's what it should be like. You know, that's what it should be like.
Definitely. I mean, when part of the reason I started this is to allow and in some ways give permission for women to just live their most authentic lives.
Oh, yes.
And let them know that it's okay. Their feelings are okay. Their feelings are common, and that it's okay to step into who they truly want to be, as opposed to living a life that they were given. So part of my background was having an overbearing mother who, you know, was, once I said I was going to law school, that was the only thing she had in mind for me mm-hmm. for the rest of my life, and reminded me of that regularly. So I never even really considered not going to law school. Like mm-hmm. someone had asked me, well, what else would you do? And I'm like, I literally never even thought of anything else. It was never a conscious decision of mine to go. It was, that's what I'm doing. And although I went, I finished, and part of me is glad that I did, I don't know if how much I really wanted to do that. Mm. I mean, I wanted to be an international attorney, but that was because I wanted to travel. That wasn't because I wanted to be the attorney part. Like, I wanted to like travel the world and go all these places and do all these things. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, and again, part of that is also, obviously part of it is exposure, yeah. Right? I wasn't exposed to very many job opportunities. I wasn't exposed to doing more things. I mean, one of the things that I really, one subject I super enjoyed in high school was chemistry, but I didn't know what chemists did. Like, and it's insane to say that. I was a straight A student, very smart. I had internet access. I had internet before like my friends did. And the only thing I could think of for chemistry was like a scientist in a lab doing boring, you know, making these random products, like, you know,
and or being a teacher,
you know, yeah, or yeah. teaching chemistry. Yeah. And I was like, I don't want to do either one of those. And if I had known things like creating the, you know, perfumes, I didn't even think about perfumes yeah. or making the next face acne treatment, you know, didn't even cross my mind. And it's so funny because my husband's an engineer and he was exposed to a bunch. He did some NSBE things and at the college in the high school level, his high school has a lot of exposure to the sciences. So he had like this plethora of ideas to go to. And I was like, I literally didn't, none of those things ever crossed my mind as an option. Like not, they weren't even presented to me for me to say, I don't want to do that. It was chemistry. You get a chemistry teacher and then you blow up things in the lab. Like that was all that, that it did. And although I didn't mind the blowing up things in the lab part, but I was like, I don't see that as a long-term career.
Right.
And I certainly didn't see it as a long-term career that made real money. That was the other part was, you know, my mom was very much, you know, you need to make sure you make some real money, like not, yeah. not a teacher salary, like a $40,000. That's not good enough. You know, you need to go for the lawyer salary, $100,000 a year. So I couldn't see past that. And when you talk about women's experiences and women's awakening moments, I think we don't tell the stories. Like if you look at media and everything, we don't tell the stories of the 40-year-old woman, really. We have, you know, we had a joke of the 40-year-old virgin, which is actually the man being a virgin. But the women, once they cross like 40, they're pretty much, they start to creep into grandma role, right?
I'm not grandma.
But I'm saying in film and television, it's either they're the bombshell or they're the grandma. Like there's no like woman just kind of living a life. Like you can see you see these guys having their midlife crisis and you know how they're unhappy in their marriage and how these things are happening. But for the women, it's just, well, she should be happy, right? She's married.
Yep.
So she should be happy.
She should be happy. And then also like, you know, maybe her husband's been working. So she's been, you know, taking care of the kids or she's in her job and things like that. Yeah. You're right. Never thought about it like that, that we don't tell that story of what that looks like.
And what are the other options in changing career paths? Because I find women amazing. And because we've had to do things like take care of the kids and have a job and run a household, mm-hmm. our possibilities are seriously endless on mm-hmm. figuring out what the next stage is. We just need to figure out what that is. And then we can, 9 times out of 10, we can figure out how to do it because we figure out how to do everything else.
So. Exactly right. Hello, a woman turned a state blue. So that's all I have to say, you know, when you're looking at that. Yeah, because, and that is, I've listened to some of your episodes and that's why I love about your podcast because you are telling a different story and how women are making an impact in their family and their community life. And that some women have the same thoughts that, you know, okay, I do want to make this transition. This is what I started doing. Or, you know, yeah, this is what I went through. And for me, this is what I went through my divorce, you know, I've shared this before, and I think I have the right words. I was thinking about this getting ready for our interview for this meeting podcast today, that I don't want my daughter to see oh, mommy's doing well without daddy. What I want her to see is that mommy never stopped. Like, that's what I want her to see. Yeah. You know, I want her to see she's seen some of the challenges and, you know, struggles that come along with, you know, I don't consider myself to be a single parent. We co-parent. So I don't fall into, because I don't want to ever diminish the role that he has in her life, in what he's doing. And we do, you know, co-parent. And so I don't want her to see that mommy never stopped. My mom kept going and she did amazing things, you know. And I'm also changing my name back. So I'm going back to my maiden name. And I think I shared my blog post with you, you know, we can talk about losing myself. Mm-hmm. It was when I got to the university here that I found that inquisitive K again, and who, and wanting to, you know, work with students on this level. And then now how does that merge with the person that, because when we do get married, you know, we do incorporate our partner's style and life, and that does, you know, change who we are and things that we do, but we shouldn't lose ourselves as part of the process. And so getting that merger back, and that's also, you know, part of my story too, is not even, you know, people say, well, what's the big deal about going back to your maiden name? For me, it's huge. It's huge. It's like, I birthed this person again. There you go.
Yeah, definitely.
This person is coming back again, you know, of being, you know, now who, what I like to do.
Well, I think it's also, you know, reclaiming who you are and realizing, and I think it's a symbolic, if nothing else, it's symbolic that you're detaching yourself from that person that you became with him.
And I love that.
Going back to, you know, whoever that is before, whether it's going back to or adding to or taking a new direction. My goal is to build like a community of women where we're just supporting each other. And if we want to take multiple turns, because I look at the men out there and they fail and they fail and they fail and fail. And, you know, our recent president's one of them. 7 bankruptcies. And they're like, well, we'll treat the country like a corporation. And I'm like, but he's failed at the corporation thing. So why would you want this person in charge? But men just keep doing it. They keep getting more money. They will bankrupt a company, go get another company. They just start churning over and over again. And then women. So for me, my story was law, work, stay-at-home mom, then back to the work, more entrepreneurial. And becoming a stay-at-home mom was not an easy transition in we do not do well with accepting women who want to step out of the workforce.
No, we do not. So, and my sister is one of those. I mean, she was just like yourself. So I'm always an advocate for, you know, women who stay at home and go back to the workplace and then go back to home, like, let them be.
Yeah, they're not an advocate. I had plenty. I mean, for years, it took me years to feel comfortable being at home, even though I knew being at home was where I needed to be.
Yeah.
Just because, and I would be afraid to tell people that I was a stay-at-home mom because, you know, the first question is, are you wasting your degree? And I was like, I didn't know I wasted it. And believe me, the student loan people still want their money. So it's all mine.
It's all yours. That's
it's
for sure.
All mine. I am keeping it. I have it to frame and, you know, it's
mine. Not wasted at all.
Not at all. So, you know, am I using it right this second? No, but that doesn't mean I'm not using it in a different way. I mean, I still have the legal knowledge. I still have the education. And I'm just applying it in a different way. It's not in a law firm or it's not at a company. It's for my children. And my desire was to raise my children, or is my desire still, because they're still little, to raise them. And I also say this is a privilege. I had the privilege of being able to do that. And I do not take that for granted. So I do not knock anyone for, you know, staying in the workplace. And I also know how hard it is. So I don't knock anyone who has the ability to, but chooses not to. We are all walking our own paths, but it's just sometimes very disheartening to be able to express yourself and say, yes, I stayed home with my kids. And, you know, the conversation just veers off and you're no longer included in it.
Yeah. Like you don't, and I think sometimes, you know, that the stigma that comes home with being a stay-at-home mom is the same thing that happens when you're divorced. Mm-hmm. So what happened? What did you do wrong? My mother said two things to me when I told her, you know, what was happening and that, you know, I was looking at divorcing, you know, my husband. And she said, one, you don't have to explain yourself to anybody. And then she goes, that includes your sister. Cause my sister's about 6 years older than me. Mm-hmm. She's been married 20 something years, but she was like, you don't have to explain yourself to anybody. And two, no one's going to understand what you dealt with in your household, because, you know, what did I do wrong? Like, here's this great Christian man. He does all this stuff. And that's, I think that's probably why I stayed a little bit longer than probably what I should have, because really, you know, 2015. So probably 3 years earlier, I should have, when that awakening moment happened about, I don't want to be married to you when I'm 48 years old. That's probably when I knew what was going on, you know, there. And so I should have, you know, left at that time, but I held on a little bit longer for some of the things that you said, but that's the stigma that comes around with divorce. I didn't tell anybody at my job. When I shouldn't have to, but in a sense, when, you know, when you're working in this level and people see you in a different life, eventually I did disclose to a couple of people, like, as a leader, I'm a leadership position in my unit at the campus. They knew because I was having to move, take days off, things like that. And so I could trust my close colleagues there. And then it was probably maybe a couple months later, I have someone I supervise and she's very involved in the community. And so she was always inviting me to things. Well, I had to start saying no to some stuff because they were on the off schedule when I had my daughter, and I'm never going to compromise my time with her. And right. So I knew this person. It's funny how I think God puts people in your life for a reason, a season, a blessing. And so it's ironic that she would be one of the first people I would share that with, but she understood. She involved with the man who has, you know, they've been dating for a long time, who has two kids. Like, she understood the whole custody and all that stuff. And so I felt comfortable disclosing that to her and then having several conversations about the whole process. But what was funny, April, when people I supervise and people in my department finally figured it out or knew when I felt comfortable sharing that, well, you know, I'm going through separation and divorce, it was like maybe 8 months, like 8 months into my separation. And someone said, oh, like, I thought, like, so this, you just didn't leave him now? Like, no, I left him in the summertime. Like, you know, it's like, so they're like, I didn't know. Well, you shouldn't have. I wasn't trying to make it known, you know, to that, but it was dealing with, you know, that stigma that comes along with, you know, with that. I remember my mother saying, don't tell people at church you're going through divorce because all the women are going to think that you want their man. I was like, oh, goodness.
No, seriously. I mean, if all these, I mean, there's just so many elements of, for women to make changes.
Yes. But men, no, they could.
They don't have any of those stigmas. It doesn't matter. They can quit their jobs. They could literally, they can live on your couch. Like, your husband could be at home and his boys wouldn't be like, get up. I mean, he may have a boy who says, get up and get, you know, get to work. But they'd be like, oh, you got a woman who's taking care of you? Good for you. Like, it's like, you don't have a job. That's what you say? Well, I mean, my woman wouldn't let me do it. So more power to him that he would. Not a woman would. So, and for some reason, so women, it's like, stay home and you taking care of the house and the kids and you taking care of all this stuff. And it's like, you just have to do more. And it's like, well, you need a paycheck too. And I've been seeing a lot of memes go around and men constantly talk about, you know, what the women need to do. You know, the women need to have, they need to be able to cook and clean and they need to do this. And I'm like, I'm not cooking and cleaning for you. So why do I got to do, make sure I do that?
And I need a partner. Hello.
Yeah. I need a partner. What are the things that you have to do to bring to the table? Because it doesn't ever seem like you guys have to bring anything to the table. We got to keep ourselves in shape, cook, clean, and take care of the house, take care of the kids. And what do you got to do? You just got to go to work every day. Like, that's the only thing you say. You got to keep a job, not even a good job, just a job.
A job. Well, I tell you what, April, on this, the other side of 40 for me, you know, it's not compromising. I have boundaries and, you know, and standards. I have my standards, but definitely more boundaries. And then along the lines of what you're talking about, a partner, you know, I thought that out of anything, with my ex-husband, I thought he was going to be a good partner because we both had models of that. I mean, my ex-father-in-law is an amazing man, you know, and no one's perfect, but right. just a very loving, kind. And I still am close with, you know, close with in-laws, you know, decent, cordial, things like that, you know, no issues there. But I thought of anything that he was going to be a partner and would have my back, be a cheerleader, you know, that type. And so that didn't happen. And I think on the other side of 40, as a divorced woman, you worry about that. You know, you know you're going to find it. And so when your significant other moves on faster, you know, than you do, then I didn't have the shame with it. It's fine. I'm glad. But it did bother me a little bit, you know, and because I'm like, what does that say? Reflection of me. And I just had to get over that and be like, it is what it is. Yeah, it is what
I mean,
it is.
And if anything, that means is a positive reflection of you because he wanted to get married again. Because
I've never heard that. There you go. That
he wasn't jaded and say, oh, I would never do that again, because you know, that was a hot mess. He obviously liked it enough to want to do it again.
I like that. That's okay.
A very positive outcome for you. Yes, I'm getting better at looking at the bright sides of things.
I need that. You know, I never thought about that perspective on it, of that. That's why he would, you know, and I think it's a good perspective, another insight on that whole thing, because yeah, that has been thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. This has been, I've enjoyed this conversation and I love the question about the awakening moment, because, I don't think it's going to stop. Like, no. You know,
that's why you asked, is it just one? And I'm like, no, I mean, I know people who've had four or five at different ages. And that's why when I typically explain it, I say around 40, because some people will have one at 20, some will have it at 25, and they'll just have multiples. Ultimately, it's how much are we tied into ourselves about mm-hmm. what we want. I think journaling helps, and really being able to sit with ourselves and sit with what we want and desire and really assess what's going on around us. And I think when we have the actual awakening, it's because we started just living mm-hmm. and we weren't really tied into ourselves very much. We were just living our life. And then one day we're just like, oh, what did I build?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. How did I let that go by?
How did I do this? Like, this is not what I wanted at all. Like, I'm like, I haven't traveled nowhere. I mean, granted, we're in COVID, but I'm like, I haven't gone half the places I wanted to go by now. So I need to figure this out, because I need to go, because I don't know if tomorrow's promised to me. So I need to, you know, figure out how I'm getting out of here, obviously absent COVID, but might be some time. So I got some time to build up.
So I think, you know, taking care of ourselves, you know, just like being authentically you and reclaim your narrative is for anybody, whether you're divorced or not. But I would say, if there's anyone listening that is going through a divorce or has gone through a divorce, you know, set a routine. So, and actually let me go back a little further than that. What you have to take it almost in stages. So you'll hear people talk about grief and things like that. So of course I'm not a life coach or anything like that. So I'm just sharing what I know. So I'm not going to discuss that part of whatever my therapist shared with me, because that was just nuggets for me. But I would just say some takeaways for people, that realize that it can happen in stages, and how you handle your separation at the beginning, it may be a different part. You know, you handle it very differently a year later. Feelings may not, you know, I've recently shared that I didn't really have the feelings the first year or two. Like, I was okay. I was good. You know, other things were going on that I said I needed to seek out a therapist and work my way through that. But now some different feelings are like, just like what I just shared, like, okay, no one on the horizon. Cause I thought at least by now I'd have somebody, you know, that I'd be hanging out with, talking to. And that has been very interesting, you know, of not really having that. And that's okay. But it's in a way to realize that there might be these stages that occur as you're going through your divorce or processing your divorce. So try to have a routine of what makes you happy. And if it can make, there are a lot of free things to do, but if you can, you know, have it put a cost to it, but then also not have a cost to it. So then that way you don't maybe feel as guilty, you know, with that. But I know I have a routine and certain things, and my routine has changed. Like now this year, I realized that Mondays are hard when my daughter's not with me. And coming into the office or working from home. So now I have like a Monday routine, and I'm about 2 months in, and it's pretty good. And I keep it up even when she's not even when she is with me. But it just all of a sudden hit me like 2 years later, man, Mondays are starting to get really hard when I have to say bye to her Sunday night. You know, who would have ever, it didn't bother me until probably around October of last year. And so, and just working my way through that and acknowledging that, yeah, that's what the problem was, Kay. Because in my mind, I was okay with my divorce and things are good. We're cordial. It was amicable. He lives down the street, but the underlying stuff. So yeah, but definitely have a routine and being open to try a lot of different things. Sometimes when I'm in some of these other rooms listening and people are talking about dating and experiences, I like to call them experiences because that's what it is. It's an experience. Yeah. You're meeting someone, you're having an exchange of information and trying to get to know. And that way it takes off the stigma. If it doesn't work or you decided just to be friends or not, or cordial and stuff like that, that you don't get as disappointed, you know, because heartbreak after 40 is totally different than heartbreak before 40. You know, when someone doesn't like you after 40, your mindset is different. Like, oh my God, I'll never find anybody. You know, I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life.
I just look at Mrs. Knowles, Mrs. Tina Knowles, and she found her dream man. And she was not a young woman when that happened. And she found herself a fabulous man. So I believe it's out there for all of us.
Amen.
And I mean, I am currently married, so I know some people are saying, what do you know? You're not out there. But I just know there are men who still want just nice women, and they're out there.
Yes, they are.
So
yes, they are.
They're the women, they're the men. You guys will find each other. And that's all. Do you have anything to promote?
Just make sure you subscribe to my podcast, Coffee and I forgot what my podcast is. Make sure to subscribe to my podcast, Coffee and Divorce Chat. It's found on all platforms, but definitely iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and was just listed on iHeartRadio. Subscribing gives you an opportunity to get some bonus content that's coming up and here's some special things from some of my guests. But follow me on Instagram too as well, Coffee and Divorce Podcast. That's the Instagram handle for it. And I just wanted to add to what you just said. I firmly believe that if I'm out there doing the things that I love, I will meet somebody. Even if it's like this, having met you, getting to know you and seeing all the things that you're doing, making a connection, but then also meeting, you know, a man and seeing where that can go. But I firmly believe if I'm out there doing the things I like to do, because that means that person likes to do the same thing. Hope yet. Yes.
There's hope. Well, femmes, let's give yourself grace and I will see you next week. Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Other Side of 40. You can find us at our site, theothersideof40.com, and on Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Other Side 40.